The Bible isn't about you. It's about what Jesus has done for you.
Chris Roseborough talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
I'm going to take 3 to 4 of the most popular misquoted evangelical proof texts and demonstrate from the texts themselves that if you read yourself into them, you not only miss the point, you miss the comfort of the cross. And so I'm going to tell you the better story that these texts actually tell you when you put them back into context.
You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough making the case against me-centered, misquoted scriptures June 13th and 14th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois.
We don't take our agenda from the polls. We don't take our agenda from what the world is saying. Our agenda is given us by the God who made us.
The media put this out as you cannot have religious liberty or you are an anti-gay bigot.
You see the president of Planned Parenthood confusing the empirical question, what is the unborn and when does life begin, with her own philosophical worldview.
The Christian husband learns what it is to be a husband who loves his wife as Christ loved the church by experiencing how he is not like Christ.
On-demand listeners of Issues Etc. love hearing sound theology while walking the dog.
Well, it's been called by the researchers involved in the project Cosmology's Missing Link, not only a home run but a grand slam for cosmology, for theoretical and experimental physics. It claims to answer one of the ultimate questions about the origins of the universe itself. How does the media coverage of a reported recent breakthrough in the Big Bang Theory, how does the media coverage deal with the other kind of ultimate questions raised by this kind of discovery? The religious questions that are quite obviously lurking behind so many of these stories about a recent breakthrough in the Big Bang Theory. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org will join us for the first half hour or so. We'll talk about the media coverage of this reported breakthrough in research into the Big Bang Theory. A little bit later, the church will be remembering, actually the church is remembering on this day, Joseph, the guardian of Jesus, stepfather, guardian is the best term there, protector of Jesus. Dr. Jeff Gibbs of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis will be our guest. We'll remember Joseph along with the church today. And then Pastor Scott Stiegenbauer will be with us. Part two of our series with him on God's gift of marriage. Today, myths about cohabitation. He is author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Your Marriage by God's Design. Joining us to talk about media coverage of a reported breakthrough in the Big Bang Theory, Terry Mattingly, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here again.
We got two big papers, the New York Times, Washington Post, covering this discovery. Compare and contrast the two for us, especially with regard to the big beginning questions that the story raises.
Well, I thought it was fascinating that the Washington Post attempted to stick its toe in the theological waters at all. In fact, I gave them kind of a shout out on that in the sense that I don't think anybody expects science writers on the day a major story like this breaks to have all their theological ducks in a row and to have a sidebar on the theological implications of all this. I'm a practical enough journalist who's been in enough newsrooms to know that that's just not realistic. But I thought it was fascinating that they signaled right off that this thing had theological implications with the very first words of their story, which to any Christian or anyone who knows the Bible, when you start a story with, in the beginning, the universe got very big, very fast. I mean, like, in the beginning, could you possibly be more obvious than that? And then they got into other things that the language got sort of vague and imprecise. I mean, at one point, the universe pretty much transforms itself. That's the language. Like, you have this anthropomorphic universe that's transforming itself. Another place, you have certain energies that are created, yet there's no hint at what created them. I mean, so it's, I'm not saying it was perfect. And I also know this subject well enough. I've read enough Kambox comments. There is nothing in the world you could have printed in this story that would not have offended somebody involved in these debates. There are folks that the minute you even hint at a God, they go ballistic. There are other people that if you don't write God in every other sentence, they're going to say you're trying to avoid the opposite. I did a shout out to the Washington Post for the simple reason that they at least said the obvious. They finally hauled off and said, this is territory that is normally the stuff explored by theologians, not astrophysicists and stuff. And dang it, let's give them credit for at least that. The New York Times, on the other hand, really seemed to go out of its way, around and around, to avoid all of this. I was particularly taken by the fact that they kept talking about the evolution of the universe, and yet the story itself concerns a moment when something goes from nothing to somethingness, or from almost nothing to a lot of somethingness. Whereas evolution is normally, in scientific terms, described as changes in a system that already exists. I also know that a lot of people don't like to use the term evolution outside of biology, because how do you have kind of survival of the fittest when you're dealing with materials that are not alive? I mean, when you're dealing with the inanimate things, you know, and energy forces. The New York Times, in other words, just simply avoided the subject altogether. Then right near the very end of my post on this topic of Get Religion, I must admit I got a little bit whimsical for a second, because I was struck by the fact, the language in the story at one point. Let me see if I can get this and read it to you. They have long suspected that those forces, it says, are simply different manifestations of a single unified force that ruled the universe in its earliest, hottest moments. And I was kind of tickled by single unified force that ruled the universe. There again, you have the word ruled, you know, which can be interpreted a lot of different ways. And I wondered if perchance this single unified force that ruled the universe had anything to do with that single unified force that surrounds us, penetrates us, and binds the galaxy together, to quote that great New York Times source, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I'm wondering, what could the you kudos to the Post. What could the Post have done better with respect to exploring the, for lack of a better term, metaphysical implications of the discovery?
Well, it's not so much what they could have done on day one, but what I hope they do next. Like I said, I think it's expecting a lot of a newspaper to have this thing ready to roll when nobody knew this was coming. There's a great video out there, in fact, put up by Stanford University, where a member of the staff of the university visits the home of the scientist who is at the heart of this. I believe that's John Kovac that they end up visit. And he doesn't even know this is his theory has been proven by this other team of scientists. No, I think I got my names wrong here, but we can look that up later. The point is, they showed up at his front door, and he didn't even know his theory had been validated. So you get to see the shocked look of surprise on his face and everything when he finds out. So if he doesn't know, the New York Times copy desk doesn't know, is my point. And the Washington Post copy desk doesn't know. No one can expect them to have this thing ready to roll. Now, what happens next is, I hope they have some kind of story where they interview a lot of different people from different religious traditions and say, what is your tradition's take on this discovery? What are the implications for something from nothing? What are the implications for, you know, something being created, in effect, out of a void? This goes better with some views of religion than with others. I'm sure this would be a lively article, and I just wanted to encourage the Washington Post to go ahead and jump on that and tap in that rebound.
Why do you think the Times, of equal caliber with the Post in the minds of many, would avoid the issue that the Post at least introduces?
I really don't have a clue. I looked at it. In fact, the Los Angeles Times story is even worse. It has almost like it doesn't even have a void in the middle of its story. It's just, you know, strictly scientific language, and you wouldn't have the slightest clue that this raises any larger questions. I don't know why the New York Times went silent on it, but at this point, I think all we can do is praise the Washington Post, chide the New York Times, and say that maybe what we had here was a failure of imagination.
Should there be and this is going to be a more thoughtful piece, certainly not something that one could dash off in the course of one news cycle, but an exploration of the use of language, not only by the press, but also the language like the universe was born, forces were created. My casual reading and kind of the pop science of this subject, that language is replete in the popularization of cosmology.
Yeah.
It's used almost uncritically, the anthropomorphizing of forces, of matter, of the universe itself. Could someone do a follow-up and say, why do scientists talk this way?
Well, you're precisely right, and it would be a lot of fun, too. I mean, stop and think about this. This is what I hinted at in my post. Try to pick a safe verb.
Hmm.
I mean, how do you write any of these sentences without a verb in it? I mean, they're trying to describe things that happened, but is transformed safe? Is ruled safe? Is created safe? Pick a verb, any verb. All of them are going to kind of have a subject-verb predicate construction, and you're going to end up saying, well, there wasn't anything. Then there was something. Something happened, and something caused it to happen. The verb kind of points backwards no matter what you try to do with it. And like I led my post, it's not an easy day to be a science writer if you're trying to write a nice, safe story that avoids ultimate questions, is it?
We're talking about media coverage of reported breakthrough in the Big Bang Theory. Terry Mattingly, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, is our guest. He's also founder and editor of GetReligion.org. 10 more minutes with him on the other side of the break. I'm Todd Wilkins. Stay tuned.
Carpet, hardwood, tile, stone, laminate, you name it, they've got it at Vallo Floor Coverings in Edwardsville. Vallo's offers competitive pricing, a knowledgeable sales staff to help you with product selection, and name brands like Shaw, Congoleum, Mohawk, Florida Tile, and more. Vallo Floor Coverings, 1009 Plummer Drive in Edwardsville, 618-656-7788, or valofloor.com.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
In Higher Things, we believe that if you put good Christ crucified for you Lutheranism into a youth, you'll get a good Christ crucified for you Lutheran youth. Join us this July at the Higher Things Crucified Youth Conferences in Florida, Wisconsin, Utah. Check us out at www.higherthings.org. Higherthings.org. Dare your youth to be Lutherans this summer.
Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler, pastor, or teacher? Would you like to be equipped to teach more effectively? Join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 15th through the 17th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Find the conference schedule recently posted at ccle.org. Discover the education that is our Lutheran heritage, ccle.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of a reported breakthrough in the Big Bang and some of the religion ghosts, those angles lurking in those stories. Terry, you spoke earlier about those who appear to, like the New York Times, appear to try to avoid the religion angle, the metaphysical angle here in their coverage of this story. Do you think that they were mindful of what you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, that this kind of story can get you letters to the editor for a month?
Yeah. In my very first job in journalism, I had an editor, a news editor at the small paper I worked on in Champaign, Urbana, that he used to refer to these subjects as green frogs. A green frog is someone who calls up on the phone, and they're just shouting at you, and they're mad, and there is nothing in the world you can tell them that will stop them from being mad at you. And a lot of those tend to have something to do with religion. So over and over, I heard him, you know, kind of let out a long sigh, put his hand over the end of the phone and say, "Mattingly, there's a green frog on line 3. Would you please take care of it?" Since I was the designated person who spoke religion, you know, on this copy desk. I think to some degree that's sort of what's going on here. Like I said, the minute you publish one of these stories, your communication boxes are going to explode at the end of it, your comment boxes, I should say, because some people are going to chide each other for the slightest perceived error in dealing with the science. Other people are going to chide folks or call to say they're going to hell or whatever for the slightest problem in theological language. It's a total no-win situation. Yet at the same time, we're talking about this thing heading toward a Nobel Prize with all certainty. This was a huge story. Some people called it, you know, in this phase of science, one of the most important pieces of laboratory theoretical work coming together, you know, in decades. How do you possibly ignore it? Yet how do you write the story without ignoring the theological elephant in the living room?
Well, and especially since this is a Nobel Prize, no one knows who's going to get the prize, but this is a Nobel Prize worthy, at least a contender there. That means the story isn't going away, doesn't it?
Nope. It's good. We're going to be listening to it for a while. By the way, I looked it up, and the name of the man at Stanford is Andre Lind. L-I-N-D-E, who's in this delightful video where a student shows up at his front door to tell him that, in effect, his life's work has just been validated. It's a beautiful moment.
I know that this is not – well, it is. It's kind of an angle on the religion angle, and that is, Terry, very often the media is dealing with religion versus science. So
– right.
Your thoughts on getting the science correct here. What I've discovered in the coverage, and I've been very interested in the story itself because it's just a little avocation of mine, but what I've discovered in the coverage of this, the science media tends to be very technical to the point of the average layperson just simply can't understand what the story says.
Right.
The popular media tends to dumb it down so far that it's not even accurate. What about just your thoughts on some good translation of science into the media?
Oh, and in this case, we have to make it worse, because to some degree, we have to use theological terms as well. Now, I know exactly what you're saying. You're trying to write a story that can be comprehended. You know, the old Associated Press speak is that it's supposed to be at middle school level. You're supposed to be using language that can be understood by a middle schooler, but it's got to be accurate enough to please a Stanford or an MIT physicist. Good luck with that. I feel the same way sometimes when you're talking about theological concepts. I mean, I guess the meeting of the mind or the total meltdown that could occur is if you have someone who comes along in a comm box and tries to say that this somehow validates their concept of premillennial dispensationalism, showing that creation occurred in stages. You know, can you imagine trying to explain that to a reader? It's the meeting of two worlds that don't talk to the public very well, and at the same time, they don't want to talk to each other. I pity the reporter that has to wade into that and get the job done. At the same time, how do you avoid the ghost, the theological ghost in this subject? By the way, there's one other factor that we should mention. I'm sure you've noticed, if this is an avocation of yours, that biologists tend to be extremely prickly on anything that comes near evolution, the cause of evolution, or whatever. My observation through the years is that people who deal with astrophysics, and they do with astronomy and astrology and everything else, these folks tend to be a little bit more open in talking about kind of the wonder and the majesty of their systems that they're dealing with. And frankly, you run in to more religious believers, both traditional and untraditional, the minute you start looking at the heavens rather than when you start looking at slides under microscopes in the world of biology. Have you noticed that to be true?
Absolutely. I mean, I think they're forced to do it. The cosmologists, the theoretical physicists, the experimental physicists, they all deal with stuff that is on a daily basis that they admit is beyond their comprehension. They're just trying to feel around the edges of these things. They have so many mysteries in their subject that they do wax metaphysical. They're more comfortable with the metaphysical.
The equivalent in biology is you watch biologists get very uncomfortable when they have to start talking about the moment of the creation of life. That's kind of their big bang. And that just, you know, you're not going to see biologists warm up to talking about that very well. Yet maybe there's just something about the beauty of the systems that when you start looking through that telescope and you look up, you end up saying to yourself, my God, it's just got bigger. I mean, you know, or how in the world do we explain all this without saying in the beginning?
I wonder about this. Is there a column in this that what you've suggested here just a moment ago, two groups that don't do a very good job of talking to the media and don't want to talk to one another, science and religion, is there actually some common ground there that these are two groups that have a common problem? They have a hard time explaining themselves, and they generally tend to be covered poorly by the media. Common ground for science and religion.
Well, I know lots of people who've written lots of grant proposals combining those two subjects. A colleague of mine who teaches at Oxford is doing a lot of very interesting work on this. Our mutual friend Rod Dreher, you know, has been involved in projects on this. And you're just as likely, when you get that group together, you're just as likely to find a Catholic priest with a Ph.D. in physics in the middle of that room as you are to find somebody who's trying to deny that the subject doesn't exist. It's like I said, the closer you get to that telescope and the lens and the eyepiece on it, the more likely you are to find people who want to raise the cosmological questions. And like I said, at some point, it's hard to avoid the language. There are no safe verbs.
So
try to find one.
What's the way forward for the guy sitting at the science desk who's probably worried about his job as much as, you know, the guy sitting at the religion desk, maybe a little bit less, but the guy sitting at the science desk, what's your advice to him if you're his editor on how to proceed on stories like this?
Well, my advice to the reporter, first of all, you're not going to be able to get it into a 500-word story, which is why I suggested that we're probably going to have a follow-up on the religious angle. Here's all I know to do when you're dealing with theologians and the language is shockingly similar at times. The only thing you can do as a reporter is to ask the person to keep putting it into their own words. And if at the end of their explanation, you either A, don't understand still, or B, you don't think the public can understand, at some point you just have to keep asking them to try again. You're not going to do it. You're going to need to quote them in terms that they believe are accurate enough. At some point you have to say, how would you explain this to my mom? How would you explain this to a person on a sidewalk outside your office? How would you, you know, some scientists are even willing to try to do that. Some theologians are willing to do that. Others are not. You've got to keep making phone calls until you can find someone who's willing to try. And you know that the minute you print it, there's going to be folks that disagree, that disagree with the wording, that disagree with the fact you tried. But that's a sign that you're on the right track, chasing an important subject, not evidence that you shouldn't have tried in the first place.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time, as the church is today, remembering Joseph, not the Old Testament Joseph, but the New Testament Joseph, sometimes thought of as the stepfather of Jesus, maybe better thought of as the guardian or protector of Jesus. The church remembers him on March the 19th, and since it is Wednesday, March the 19th, we will do the same. Dr. Jeff Gibbs of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis will be our guest.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Where do we find Jesus in the book of Job? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Job in 4 Not-So-Easy Steps. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. Pastor Ross Johnson has written our Wittenberg Trail feature. It's titled Lutheranism, Christianity's Best Kept Secret, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Hi, this is Pastor Dan Kistler of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Pacifica, California. A small congregation on the Pacific Coast just south of San Francisco, we invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation that He won for us on the cross and now delivers to us through His Word, baptism, and the Lord's Supper. For more information about us or for free downloadable sermons, visit our website at oursaviorspacifica.com. God's peace be with you always in our Savior, Jesus Christ.
Streaming 24/7 sacred music and talk stations from a 500-square-foot office in Collinsville, Illinois, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The dangers inherent in particularly Lutheran Reformation Christians trying to be Baptists in their worship approach.
Craig Parton talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Just at the moment, a lot of people, Baptists and evangelicals included, are looking for more substance in their worship life. Many of them are looking to helpful liturgies and the hymns of the church to bring content to their services. Lutherans are throwing that stuff off the deck of the boat as fast as they can do it. So there'll be some comments, some discussion about why that's a dangerous avenue for Lutherans to take.
You can meet and hear Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals June 13th and 14th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org.